You know the expression, you are the five people you surround yourself with? Cody's nodding for people who can't see him. I think it's wildly misunderstood.
Hmm.
I think people believe when they hear that expression that what it means is go pick five people who you're inspired by and spend all of your time with them. As if those people would choose you to be one of the five people that they surround themselves by. And I thought it'd be fun for us to talk about it.
Let's do it.
Perfect. Remember, I've forgotten to tell you guys this for a while now. If you're liking the podcast, go hit that five-star rating for us, wherever you're listening. Feel free to share it with a friend. Let's get to the topic.
Why is this pertinent right now?
I just came back from the Real Coaches Summit in Las Vegas. But when this comes out, I think it will be about 2 weeks ago. And whenever I go to events like that, I find myself hanging with a group of people. And it's, you know, you mingle with as many people as you possibly can, but there's a certain level of comfort that comes from a smaller group within the group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to look at the sociology of who ends up with who and why. You know, at the meals, who's sitting with who didn't know each other before the event? How do they end up with those people? Who's going out at night with who? Why? How did those groups end up being the groups that formed? And I think I always find it fascinating because typically it's people who are experiencing similar elements of life with different levels of success, failure, skill set, whatever the case might be, where there's a certain level of balance in the group that affords everyone the opportunity to bring something to the table and make everyone in the group better. Even if it's a small thing. Like, I'll give you an example. I found myself with spending a lot of time with a guy named Jeb, who I met at the Silverback Summit in October. Jeb's been in the game for a long time, wrote articles for all of the publications that we were looking at coming up before there was like abundancy of information online. Mike Dola, who owned and sold Stronger You to Anytime Fitness. Derek Stanley, who is a great online coach out of Texas, who has a really successful business, Derek Stanley Fitness. Austin Current, who wrote a book for Penguin Random House, I believe that was the publisher, on strength and conditioning basics for people who want to learn how to do it. Sam Miller, who I've had on the podcast before, people know he's got his, you know, Metabolism University, teaches people all things health, nutrition, supplementation, blood work, things of that nature. That was the crew that I was finding myself with. Jason Brown was out with us for dinner. Jason was the first guy writing program design for CrossFit gyms way back in the day. He was programmed for over 200 CrossFit gyms before anybody else was doing it. You know, Dr. Alan Bacon, who was an oral surgeon in the Carolinas, who moved himself out to Hawaii to live a life that he always wanted to live. And he stopped pulling teeth and he started teaching people about supplementation. Guy's a unit. You know, this is the group I found myself hanging out with. And I just found it interesting because I had something to learn from all of them. And I had something to add for all of them. I think the thing I added was, fuck you, we're doing this. You know, everyone's kind of corralling. What are we doing? And I'm like, we're going for tacos. We're all going for tacos. Where are we going for tacos? We're going to the place off the strip in the hood because that's where the good tacos are going to be. Okay. I just took control and we went and everyone had a great time. And the conversations that we were having were, I was the student in most of them. And I just found it really cool.
Do you think that there's a difference in, that's an acute situation?
I think it's a microcosm.
Of?
The real world.
Okay. So that was, do you find that when you go to events, were all those people speakers as well?
No.
Do you find that
when? In fact, I think among that group, it was just me and Austin who were speakers.
Okay.
No, Jason was a speaker too. And Alan. Okay, so fine. Let's call it half the group.
All right. When you go to things like that and you're exposed to a new environment, right? Do you find that you gravitate towards people in the same, a similar like status hierarchy? as you?
No. And that's the easy thing to do. And it depends on the event. So let me go back. Let me backtrack that a second. When I spoke at Coaching Con last year, there was a private room for the speakers, which I think was a real value add, because when you're a speaker, there's a lot of attention of yours that people want to have. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I want to give it to them. And it gets exhausting.
Yeah.
So there's it's nice that there's a reprieve, like go here and nobody else can get into that room. And if you just need like to drink a cup of tea to clear your throat again, because you've been talking all day, if you need to take a 15-minute nap, if you want to grab a snack, you want to just collect your thoughts, you can go in there. No one's coming.
Yeah.
And you're not like back in your hotel room.
Right.
At that event, there was more of like speaker to speaker because of that additional room, I think, if you will. But there was still plenty of engagement with the attendees. At this event, there was no room like that, which creates a different level of energy. It doesn't give you that reprieve, and it does force the engagement with the attendees in a way that I might not have done if I had a room to go retreat to. And I like that. Mm-hmm. And then a third example is I was not a speaker at Gabrielle Lyon's event, Forever Strong, mm-hmm. in January in Austin. I bought a VIP ticket and I found myself in the VIP, definitely talking more to people in the VIP than people who are not. But that's not a status thing as much as a values thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know who anybody in that room is. I'm talking to people and I find out later that they have 500,000 followers on Instagram and a 9-figure supplement brand. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know nothing about them when I meet them. And now we're friends. But I had no idea. And then there's a fourth example, which is the Silverback Summit, where I was an attendee and there was no VIP. And in that case, I ended up hanging out mostly with the speakers. But I wasn't a speaker. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all about just finding the right energy and creating connection on purpose.
So it sounds like in every one of those scenarios, you were describing finding the people who may have been at and above the level that you were at for impact, for purpose, mission, what they were trying to achieve and attain.
I think that minimizes it, because I also think that there were people there who were, doing less, mm-hmm. who I was able to pull up. Mm-hmm. And they were in the groups too. Mm-hmm.
For them though, aren't they the ones being with the people who they want to be like in the same way that you're doing?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I don't necessarily only want to be with people who are doing more than me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's useful to work, like to be around somebody who reminds me of the tenacity that I need to have.
Right. Yeah.
But they're not as accomplished. They haven't built a team. They haven't done anything yet.
Well, I think that comes down to what you're looking for, right? Because mm-hmm. Chronically or acutely, right? Mm-hmm. It's the thing that people might get wrong with you're the average of the five people that you surround yourself with is it's actually the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Right.
It's how are you chronically exposed to? You spend time with losers, you end up becoming the sixth one. Mm-hmm. You spend time with millionaires, you likely end up becoming the sixth one. Mm-hmm. What you're describing is allowing yourself to live in both of those energies where you're the one who has this aspirational identity, the aspirational leader with this group here, and also being the one that is comfortable, which not all leaders are, by the way, mm-hmm. being the one that's comfortable being in the group that people aspire to be like. Like I would see this, Dave Chappelle talks about this in a stand-up, right? He's like, sometimes I'm the main character and sometimes I am the supporting character in somebody else's story. Mm-hmm. Like when you're a part of the group that you want to be like, you're the main character of the story, your story. When you're allowing someone else, you're choosing to be the mentor, the guide, the side character in their story.
I like both.
I don't see anything wrong with either one. And I think it's a good balance in those energies. Mm-hmm.
I think when people think about like, oh, 5 millionaires, mm-hmm. I want to be a millionaire. I got to go meet millionaires. It's like, okay, sure. But if you limit your life, like if you take the statement so literally, mm-hmm. that you only want to hang out with millionaires, then you miss out on all of the things that make you a complete person.
Yeah.
Right. So it's in that case, I think it's, make sure there's a millionaire in your group and allow them to influence you in their money-making ways. But one of the mistakes I see people make all the time is going into an event or an environment and targeting people. I want to make friends with that person. And I've done that. I've experienced that. I did that in Austin at Gabrielle's event. I went in with a mindset of these are the people I want to make friends with at this event. I think I made friends with one of them. The others, it turns out, don't want to be friends with me. Or I don't really want to be friends with. Excuse me. And so I made friends with other people who I didn't even know existed until I got to the event, who I still talk to on a regular basis right now.
Because you found something about them inspiring.
And because they found something about me inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of the things is some of the people who I would go into an event like that and want to make friends with, the thing that becomes uninspiring is their openness or interest in making friends in general. It's not about me. If somebody is looking to make friends, you can sense it. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to make friends with me, that only lights my flame higher. Like, what do I need to be so that a person like that would want to make friends with me? But when a person's not looking to make friends, they already have their friends. So they're going to hang out with just those friends. That's why they went there. That's like the fastest way to extinguish any interest I have in being your friend. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, sorry for those of you out there who are in this situation, but if I was single and I was looking to date and I saw this beautiful woman who had everything together, I'm like, wow, she's amazing. And then she walked outside and I went outside to talk to her and she lit up a cigarette. I would just keep walking. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't even say hi. It's that kind of a thing. Like, oh, that's a disqualifier.
Well, you're describing that individual, they're closed, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not open.
Right.
It might be just in that scenario. Mm-hmm. They're not open to the thing. It might be that they've decided where they're at their journey and their point in their life. They're not in need or they don't want to expand the circle. Mm-hmm. So there's an aspect of both people engaging in a relationship. There has to be consent, right? There mm-hmm. has to be a willingness to surround yourself with other individuals whom you might not know yet.
Right.
I've been through cycles and phases, and I'm sure you have too, where that ebbs and flows, it wanes, where I'm more open to creating new relationships and meeting new people than I am at other points in time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're describing with the stepping into the group, and one thing to be clear about, when we talk about being the sixth millionaire, right? What I'm really saying is being the person who has the capacity, the skill set, the intention, the energy, whatever you need to be to accomplish that. It's not the doing thing. So if you're going into that group and you're like, I got to meet this person because I have something to get from them, I have something to learn from them, you're going into the doing part.
Yep.
And that's desperation.
Yeah.
People, they're not interested in engaging. Like, you can smell that and you can see that on people because it's a take,
mm-hmm.
right? What you're describing is, what do I have to give? And then hopefully there's something to reciprocate at the other side.
An example there in the real world for me is I went to lunch with Mark Fisher last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have an agenda. I just wanted to meet and hang out with the guy. He's a stud. So I got in the car an hour and a half earlier than my navigation told me I had to get in the car to make sure I was there on time, pay an extra hour in the parking garage, big deal. I walked to the restaurant to make sure I knew where the restaurant we were having lunch was. I even looked at the menu to get an idea of what I was going to eat. I never texted him. I was like, hey, I'm here early. None of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just spent some time walking around thinking in the area where we were going to meet. And then 20 minutes before we were supposed to meet, I went and I sat down on a bench where I'd be able to see him coming from wherever he'd be coming from. And 15 minutes before our meeting was supposed to start, I put my phone away into my pocket because no matter what, I wanted his first impression of me to be, I'm there, I'm present. I'm there for him, not for something else. He's not having to interrupt me from being on my phone. Mm-hmm. That's because when I was at Silverback in November, and I was going to hang out with Jay Ferrugia for the first time, I was going to where we were supposed to meet. He was already there early. I was on my phone anticipating he wouldn't be there yet. He had to interrupt me from being on my phone to say, hey, man. And it wasn't a big deal. It was, hey, man, what's up? I'm like, yeah. Oh, let me put this away. And I felt like I slipped there. I felt like he shouldn't have to have interrupted me. It should have been eyes forward. There he is. So I decided to be the guy who would never be on his phone again when he was going into a meeting. It's not a habit. It's not a tactic. It's just that's who I am. Why would I be on my phone?
Because you've decided you want to be present. You want to be there. That's a thing with finding the people that inspire you, right? That circle. That's different than, all right, I'm going to align myself with these five people for what I can get by being friends with them.
Right.
Or being around them. And that's where people who use this negatively and use this for tactics of manipulation, that's where they go wrong.
For sure. Because so what you're describing is, let's take, for example, Mike Dola. I didn't know Mike Dola was a person until Monday. No idea. And then Andrew Coates, who I met a while back at the coaching con last year, says, Sean, do you know Mike Dola? Like, no, he's like, you guys should meet. And he starts explaining to me who Mike is and Mike who I am. Nice to meet you, Mike. It turns out he sold the company for probably a nice number. I didn't ask him what it was. And if we didn't hit it off, I wouldn't have been like, well, how can I get in with Mike in some way? And in the past, I might have. In the past, I might have been like, all right, that guy knows stuff I need to know about building up Active Life's business. So how do I make him my friend coach? How do I make him the guy who I can just reach out to for questions anytime I want without paying for it? Because we're, quote, friends. That's not a relationship built on any kind of a foundation that's going to last. And I didn't have to ask him anything about his business for me to get lessons that I need for myself, to get great lessons for myself out of him talking about himself and his business. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What you're describing is, in the past, you might have, the version of you might have looked at that as a transactional relationship.
Yeah. And without realizing it, by the way.
For sure. How did you navigate, I guess, get to the point now? What would be a contrast? Like, what would be the, I know that I'm not going into it for that now because ...
Yeah. So let's, an example, I guess I would make to explain that is, let's say that a friend sends you a playlist of music. Jay today sent me a playlist of music. This should keep you occupied for a while. The transactional person says, what should I be listening for? Which of these songs are why do you love these songs? Who's your favorite artist on this list? Like, all of that.
Why is that transactional?
Because it's, what do I get out of this?
Mm.
It's, how do you want me to use this information?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And it's, how can I maximize the time I'm spending doing this thing that you're gifting me? Mm-hmm. Well, that means I don't really want to do it. If he wanted me to have all of that information, he would have included it. He obviously believes the bigger gift is, here, experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be ready to accept that gift in the way that it's being given. The alternative would be like somebody saying, hey, I bought you this really nice electronics thing. And you're like, did you include batteries? No, I guess maybe they're in there. I don't know.
Are you going to tell me how to use it?
Right. Why did you think I would want this?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Well, that goes back to being closed, right?
Yes.
You're not open to receiving.
Right. Even if you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative is, Jay sends me this list. Frankly, I look at it, I'm like, this is an overwhelming list of hip hop. And I have moods and times when I want to listen to hip hop. And every time he sends me stuff, I'm like, you know what? Every time you listen, you find yourself enjoying it for one reason or another. So just listen to it. And I think that the difference is, in this case, I'm just going to listen to it and I'm going to find what I like from it. And I'm going to tell him what I liked from it, what I learned from it. Thank him for affording me the opportunity to experience something specific or something general. And that's my opportunity to share with him gratitude. And even without intention to, potentially steer him in what he shares with me in the future. I'm not trying to steer him, but that kind of feedback, like, hey, I really like this song because this, this, and this, might have him be like, oh, well, then you would really like this, 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 this. When I was talking with Mike, let's just keep going back to Mike because he's a good example. He had a company at similar scale to where we are. He exited. I'm not looking to exit. I have conversations with him about why did you decide to exit? I'm not asking him, how would you recommend I think about exiting that I'm not interested in doing right now? But I'm getting insight on what are the signs that I need to start thinking about things differently if X, Y, Z. What are the regrets that you had from doing that? What are the things that you love about having done it? And I just get to hear his story without asking him, how would you think that should apply to me? Mm-hmm. And I can deduct whatever I want from that. He's sharing the playlist. I'm deciding if I like how it sounds and if I want to keep listening to this song or not. But I'm not asking him to curate the playlist in such a way that I know exactly what I should listen to and not listen to without trying it all.
So you're asking him the questions to, what I'm hearing is you're asking him the questions to genuinely get to know him.
I'm curious. Sold his company to Anytime Fitness. Did you call Anytime? Like, what did you like? Hit somebody on LinkedIn? You were like, hey, I'm looking to sell my nutrition company? No. How did it happen? Oh, one of our clients was actually an executive at Anytime. Hmm. Interesting. And then they just called you out of the blue? Yeah. Cool. And how did that go? Like, I've never had that conversation.
Yeah.
I don't want to sell Active Life, but I do want people to want to buy it. Mm-hmm. Those are separate, right? It's kind of like I'm married. I'm not looking to sleep around, but I do want chicks to want me.
So you're getting value from the conversation without going into the conversation with the intent of extracting value.
I'm not asking him about me.
Right.
I'm not saying, what do you think I should do? Mm-hmm. How do you think I should play this?
You're not making it about you.
It's because it's not.
Right.
I genuinely want to learn about him, about his experience. And I'll deduct from that what I want to deduct from that. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask those questions in a way that respects what he wants to talk about, what he doesn't want to talk about, see what lights him up, ask him more questions about that stuff because it's fun for me to light people up. And then when the business conversation is over, like, there should be a social conversation after that. Mm-hmm. And there was.
So how do you decide that that's the type of person that you're inspired to be around?
I don't have to decide anything before.
Right. I mean, yes, agreed, 100%. Like, you should not go into it being like,
so,
without
okay,
knowing anything
you.
About
I
him.
I got you.
Right? But there's some point in the conversation where you're like, this is the type of person that I'm inspired to be.
I was genuinely curious. Hmm. I was still genuinely curious about, I wanted to know more.
Okay.
So there are people you talk to, and they're good people, and they're doing good things, and you're just not curious. Mm-hmm. Like, cool. Good for you, man. That's really great. And I find myself in situations where I'm like, if I have to think about what's a question I could ask this person that they would like to answer, if it's not just naturally happening, I don't want to be in that conversation. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be emotionally expensive to have natural conversation unless it's a really, unless there's like a big check going on for one way or the other. And that's going to happen typically deeper into relationships. I think in the beginning, it should be easy. Mm. Even if it's like thought provoking and wow, I never thought of it that way. Like, that's not emotionally heavy. Emotionally heavy for me is, okay. So you like living there? Yeah, it's cool. What's cool about it? That's emotionally heavy. I'm like, I really don't give a fuck. Mm. I don't care about where you live. Unless there's a story attached to where you live that shapes who you are that I'm curious about. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So when you're looking for, you're going into the conversations, being open, being curious, right? That's a staple of what we're talking about mm-hmm. here when the five people, you're asking the questions that you're inspired to ask. And I'm imagining at any point in time when you're having these conversations, if you feel like we're there, the conversation is over.
Yeah.
And we go.
Yes.
And I think that's a important piece because that's regardless of the level of accomplishment or the status or anything that somebody might have.
Oftentimes I don't even know those things until right. like later that night we go to dinner. I'm like, you did that?
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. But we're all like, it's kind of like dating somebody before you know that they have money.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that person's a celebrity. You're just dating them for who they are. And then you find out they're a celebrity. Now the celebrity can, I imagine, I haven't been one, but can say, this person loves me for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens I'm also a celebrity. That's a bonus for them in some ways.
So you're filtering for, maybe unknowingly, but you are filtering for traits and attributes.
That's it. So here's another thing. Someone who I'm gonna connect with, I should be able to speak with, have a really good time, be like, hey, I'm going to shoot to the restroom. And when I come back, they should be talking to somebody else.
Hmm.
And I might talk to 10 people on my way back from the restroom to them. They might not even be where we were talking before because they're not standing around waiting for me. They're not desperate for my conversation.
Hmm.
But wherever they are, if I find them and I walk into their conversation, they're welcoming me right back into it. They're introducing me to the other people in the conversation so that I can be caught up and not have to figure it out for myself. Those are people who are inspiring me. And that's something that I try and do when I'm in conversation with anybody else who leaves and comes back or anything like that. Like when we went to Strong New York, anyone I was talking to, like if you think about Greg Scheinman, for example,
mm-hmm.
I want to catch you up on Cody. This is Greg Scheinman. I met Greg 12 years ago when I was putting events on the beach. He was doing something totally different in his life. I was doing something totally different in my life. Greg now runs a mastermind for high-performing men where he helps connect them to the best people in the world at what they do. Greg, this is Cody. Cody was a client of ours living in Michigan, and we felt like there was nobody better to run our flagship business in New York than Cody. So we recruited him to move all the way out from Michigan to New York. He's awesome at developing relationships. He's incredible at communication. And I think that you guys really hit it off too. Now Greg has some basis on which to ask you questions about you. You have basis on which to ask Greg questions about Greg. And I'm in the conversation with the two of you.
Mm-hmm. I remember you doing that.
That's what I'm looking. I want people who are going to do that on a regular basis because that makes it easy. That's a skill set that you only develop if you want to be a person who does that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes me think like if it's easy in the beginning, right? There's low friction in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's likely going to stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine trying to like pull a relationship with somebody that you had just met and it's already so like draining
mm-hmm.
early on. And you're doing all of the work of trying to continue to develop and maintain that. Like, what's that going to take from you over the long term
mm-hmm.
that you could be pouring into someone else, giving to 100%. Someone else?
Another good example for me is like, I need someone. I enjoy people who are ready to make fun of me 5 minutes into knowing me.
Mm.
I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm down, like I put Mike's number in my phone as Matt. I emailed Sheila, make sure Matt and I connect, please, after this event. And I was looking for him in my phone to text him later in the night, and I couldn't find it. And when I get with him, I'm like, hey, man, I think I forgot to take your number down. And he's like, you probably just put it in your phone as Matt because you introduced me to Sheila as Matt. And I was like, yeah, I think I did. I was like, it's okay. What's your name again? Sam? I was like, no, it's Shane.
Yep.
He's like, Shane, right. And I was like, but like that little jabbing back and forth without anybody being butthurt
mm-hmm.
that we met 20 minutes ago and I put your name in my phone wrong, that's a winner for me. That's a winner. And there genuinely was like, he didn't care.
Sure. Other, if he did, that's a huge red flag.
That's what I'm saying, though. There's like, there are people who would be butthurt by that. And there's no reason to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I was hanging out with, I don't remember her last name. Oh, Olenek. Alyssa Olenek. On Instagram, she's like, I don't know, Dr. Alyssa Olenek, whatever it is. If you know who she is, you know who she is. She's a really, really, really smart PhD, exercise physiology. Like, she's the nerd you don't want to fuck with.
Mm-hmm.
And she's built a really cool thing for herself. She wants to do some of the things that we're doing at Active Life. She's got a bigger social media following, and she's significantly less advanced in business in terms of building out a team and having core offerings and products and services than we are.
Mm-hmm.
I hung out with her a lot. I learned a ton from her. And some of the conversations that we were having were really interesting because she was talking about how I'm going to be the best student this school's ever had. And I was like, that's cool. I've never had that thought.
That's a mindset, man.
In my life.
Yeah.
I was like, what do I need to get through this? Cool. I'm going to go play golf the rest of the time, even though I'm not good at it. So with her, it was a different level of comfortability. Right? With her, it was like, oh, you're really interesting. You run ultra marathons. You lift for strength. You're a walking textbook of knowledge. Your husband's in the military. You guys live close to where I went to college, and you're from a totally different, like, I'm interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what she had to give to me besides friendship. And I don't know, she has more Instagram followers. So if I wanted to learn how to do that, but I can't grow my Instagram following how she grows hers. She's a different person than me. It's just a different skill set. If I apply my skill set towards her strategies, it's not going to work.
Sure.
So it's not about clout. It's not about money. It's not about status. It's just about, I think that in all of my phases of life, I've been looking for people who complete where I am incomplete. So like Alyssa's a great example. Sam Miller is in the same boat as Alyssa. Super smart, encyclopedic knowledge, great at the study stuff. If I ever said something that I believed to be true and I was in a debate, I'd do like the over the shoulder, hey, I'm about to say this. We ready for this? Great, thanks guys. Okay, and then I could say it.
Mm-hmm.
That's their level of intelligence. A guy like Mike exited a company to be a dad and a husband. I was opening a restaurant. I'm like, I don't want to exit. And that's super cool and I'm fascinated by it. A guy like Alan just gives up being an oral surgeon to move to Hawaii and live a different life. And he's not like a hippie. He looks like a mountain man,
mm-hmm.
right? Clean shaven mountain man. That's interesting.
So what's the through line? What's the connection between all of those people that you find yourself around, whether it be in an acute circle like that, like at an event, or that you attempt to surround yourself with personally and professionally?
They're easy and they're curious.
Hmm.
They ask questions of me that force me to think about how I want to answer it. Even if it's just sharing the truth and I don't have to think about what's true, I do have to think about why are they asking this question and what's the best version of the answer I can provide. Because I want to meet the occasion for this person.
Hmm.
I don't want to give the lazy answer. I won't give the lazy answer. They're a person who, when they're in the audience of a talk I'm giving, I want to be extra good because I want them to leave the room thinking highly of me. There are certain people who just do that. And they're easy to be around. And they're challenging to be around at the same time. The challenge is I have to be the version of me that's all the way on the developed side.
Hmm.
Which has, like, it has to be me. It can't be a fake version. I can't fake it until I fail it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only version of me that they're going to be inspired to hang out with.
And that's the version of you that you want to be.
Exactly. So it aligns.
Hmm.
I like that.
Are easy and curious core values of yours?
No.
Okay. The thing that I find easy about, or interesting rather, about the easy is when we did old way, new way, it was easy, Sean.
Yep.
You know, I'm thinking about this, and a couple of mine are ambition and authenticity. And as you're describing this, the people that you want to be around the most, those are the people that I'm most inspired to be around, authentic and ambitious individuals. Mm-hmm. And I imagine this has changed and will change and ebbs and flows as we develop values and as we iterate as beings. Mm-hmm. Why is curiosity so important with the people that you want to surround yourself with?
I think someone's ability to ask a question that forces a pause is like an orgasm in my brain. That if I can just coast through a conversation, I'm so bored.
Hmm.
The ability for somebody to ask a question that forces a pause and a thought while still affording me the ease of the conversation is like a perfect cocktail of fun and growth at the same time. And there is nothing for me that is better than that.
Hmm.
It's kind of what I think in a lot of ways really good group fitness is meant to be. It's a fun environment in which you can do the training and you're growing at the same time. And that's why I think it's so intoxicating for people to go back to group fitness. They start leaving the group fitness that they're at when it becomes less efficacious, when it starts to hurt, when it becomes, frankly, when the standard drops. Mm-hmm. If that stuff is all high, there's no reason to ever leave. It's so valuable, you can't. Mm-hmm. And that's where I like to find myself in conversation.
There's no point in that for me, as you're talking about that, where it's like, all right, I don't know what to do next.
Correct. And by the way, if there is, what to do next is, all right, guys, I'm going to go take a walk.
Yeah.
I'll be back. Because maybe that's just the end of the conversation. There's nothing more to say.
Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't feel forced.
At all. Or like you're just abandoning the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's, hey, I'm going to jump and go. I want to go say something to that person over there. Cool. See ya. No one cares. Nobody.
Yeah, I'm sure we can all think of like being in the room, right? And whatever in the room means for you, mm-hmm. around people who, where you just feel like you're trying to push the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, you get done with that and you're like, I would have rather done just about anything else.
Yes.
For the last 30 minutes.
Another thing I like to look for in people is, let's just say it's six of us hanging out. Random person comes over who knows one of the six of us and just starts like that, you know, that side conversation that's like, hey man, what'd you think of that? Because that's the one that they know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be around the sixth person who brings the seventh person into the six, making us a seven.
Right.
Hey, let me introduce all of you guys to this guy. This is my friend, John. He's awesome. He does this, 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 this. He's married. He's got three kids. John, hop in.
Well, that's something that you do and something that you like to do and want to do.
Yes.
What's different then about the people? Because there's an aspect for certain that we want to be around people who complement us. Mm-hmm. Where do you find the contrast then?
Well, what you were talking about before we came on is the idea of building yourself a community or a cage.
Right.
And the difference being a community, I think that was the word, I don't remember what you used.
It was in the people who you surround yourself with either inspire you or they're a cage.
Okay, so the cage is just a close, like the way I picture that is we have our arms around each other in a circle.
Hmm.
And we can't see anything outside of the circle because everyone in the circle is like, yo, why are you looking outside the circle?
Hmm.
Everything you need is in the circle. That's uninteresting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the people who are sitting around or even standing around in a circle, looking at each other, paying attention to each other, listening to each other, encouraging each other, conversating with each other. with their eyes open for people who would make the circle more valuable and sucking those people in to grow the circle from 5 to 6 to 10 to 30 to 50 to 100. That's inspiring. It's when you can figure out, when you're the person who's like, I know exactly what this group needs. It's like a chef tasting a soup. Cumin. A little bit of cumin. Who's the cumin? Who are we going to call over to join the conversation? That guy's cumin. There's a level of social acumen there that I find inspiring. Sometimes conversations have to happen one-on-one, right? So I'm describing all of this as if it all happens in a group. But I can also talk to you about a woman I met at the event, Lauren, who I've already mentioned to you, who I think is one of these people who, if she chooses to, becomes an, of course, everybody knows who Lauren is. By 2 years from now, she could be a household name in our industry. And she could fit in the group that I was talking about, but never found herself in that group over the weekend. What I think allows somebody like her to find herself fitting in the group with us is just believing that she has value to add to that group.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes someone in the group inviting that person to the group. And the only way that that person's going to do that is if they've had one-on-one time. Do you follow me there?
Mm-hmm.
So I had one-on-one time with this woman on the second day. And the difficult thing about events in this regard is oftentimes you make your bonds on day one. And so now on day two, it's difficult for me to be like, hey, do you want to come? I don't know if the rest of your group makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I didn't find a great moment to pull her into this group. There's also an element of like, I have some projections about wanting to make sure that, especially when I'm talking with women, that they're comfortable that I'm not looking for anything, you know, beyond a friendship here.
Right.
And allowing them to feel safe around me. Because you never know. Like, people are creeps. And married guys go to these things and they fuck strangers.
Right.
That's not me. But if I was a woman, I might have my guard up.
Mm-hmm.
All that to say, the one-on-one conversations are often like a, for lack of a better word, a tryout for a variety of groups that we all live within.
Mm-hmm.
You're not trying out for the group. You're exposing yourself so that the people who are in other groups can decide which group you're the best element to add to.
I like that idea.
Right? It's not, hey, I want to be part of that group. How do I get into it?
Mm-hmm.
It's, we should be friends. And when I see a room that I think you should be in, I'm your friend. I'm just going to pull you into the room.
I really like that. It's interesting because, you know, even thinking about the relationships that I've developed with the people since moving here,
mm-hmm.
right? We all still have our own, like, we have the active life
mm-hmm.
group, right? And then those circles intersect with other circles, mm-hmm. but it's not like any one of us are like, dude, you got to come to this. So you have to be a part of all of these things.
Correct.
So it's fascinating. And I think that we all have this ambition, right? This desire to be a part of that group. And if we feel that if I feel that you bring value to a group or you would derive value from being a part of it, I'm inviting you to the group.
Right. It's the same for me with like a Mark Fisher. Mark is more accomplished than I am. So it'd be reasonable for me to say, how do I spend as much time as possible with Mark Fisher? I want to grow my business by being around a guy who's grown his business better than I have. But that's transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark is a guy who I think could be a good friend of mine in the right environments. He loves going to things like Burning Man. It's on his Instagram. Went to Burning Man. I asked him. It's been 7 times. I don't really have any interest at all in going to Burning Man at all. He shouldn't bring me into a group of friends who go to Burning Man every year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fit. And if I'm on the outside looking into that thinking, why isn't Mark pulling me into that group of friends? I'm missing the point that Mark is doing me a favor and his friends a favor by not pulling me into that group. Mm-hmm. But I would love for Mark to say, hey, I'm meeting up with Pete Dupuy, Jay Ferrugia, and these other six guys. We're going to talk about fitness business and just life as men. Yeah, I want to go to that. And my hope would be that a guy like him would say, that's where I would pull Sean. Where I would be like, hey, Mark hasn't been to a Phish concert. Next time I go, I'm going to see if he wants to come. That's right. Like, I wouldn't pull Mark into, hey, I'm playing 14 over softball, man. You interested?
Yeah.
No, he's not.
That's interesting. That's a high emotional intelligence, I guess is the right words that I'm looking for there, to be able to understand that, where you can add value to people and where our experiences are going to be in alignment with another and where we're going to get the most joy without being like the friend that you have in high school or college where you have to be doing everything together.
Well, I think that's a great segue because we have our friend groups from when we were younger. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're still tight. Maybe they're not. I have my college guys friend group. We don't see each other very often, but if we were ever to get together and I brought you, I really like you. That'd be like bringing a fucking anchor to tie around my ankle. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. You have no history with these guys.
Right.
We're going to have inside jokes that I have to now turn around and explain to you. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't invite you.
Right.
We have to be socially adept enough to recognize what the give is and what the give is not. Mm-hmm. And sometimes not inviting somebody is the gift. You wouldn't like this. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like having you there. Mm-hmm. And I still like you a lot.
Yeah. That's the better word. Socially adept. That's a great way to think about it. Because there are points where the overlap makes sense. Mm-hmm. And there are points where it would be another way of creating more of a pull, right? It'd be creating friction.
Yes.
I like that. So this whole theme, right, of being around five people that inspire you, mm-hmm. I'm imagining then that there are different buckets mm-hmm. for this.
For sure.
Right? I can think of five people that inspire me. And maybe the five freedoms is a good way for us to think about this.
Okay.
Right? We have time, purpose, health, money. What's the last one?
Relationships.
Right? So maybe we can use that as a filter for I want to surround myself either by somebody from each of those, or I've got these five separate circles. And maybe there's some intersection, right? There's a Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. Where these things might.
I think there's an intersection. And I think that what the mistake that people could make would be trying to like coordinate a team. Right. So like, okay, who's my time person?
Got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's my purpose person?
Back to transactional.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think about like, if I want to be inspired by a fitness person, I could hang out with Tom DeGooley more often, but he scares me like to train.
Yeah.
Not as a person.
Yeah.
I happen to really like the guy. And if I hung out with him more often, just in social settings, I'm confident that without even working out with him, the intensity of my workouts would go up. Mm-hmm. Not because we're working out together, but because there's something about him that I see that I want to be more like, which is why I hang out with him. And so I have to act more as if. Does that make sense?
This is a really interesting point because when we're talking about finding people that inspire you, mm-hmm. It's very important to be clear around what things, what characteristics, traits, attributes that they hold that you find inspirational, mm-hmm. because you're going to magnify those mm-hmm. for yourself just by, like you said, spending more time with that person.
Yes.
So there's a lot of intention mm-hmm. that needs to be placed around that.
Right. And I would never be like, let me hang out with Tom more because I want to intensify my workouts. Mm-hmm. Let me invite Tom to lunch because I'm slacking on my workouts right now and I need to be around Tom so I can do it.
Right.
It's got to be I like Tom and I want to hang out with him. And then as a result, I end up working out harder.
Yeah.
Byproduct.
Yes.
And what I What I do instead of building a roster is I lean into people when I need more. So for example, like Jay is a great example for Uji. If we go back to him, when I first became friendly with Jay, what I started to realize was this dude is the ultimate social butterfly. He leads the social group anywhere he is. And everybody wants him to lead it because he makes it fun. He makes it inviting. He's welcoming to anybody who wants to come be a part of it, as long as you respect the energy of the group. And I admired that. And so I saw immediately, I want more of that for myself. Mm-hmm. I want to hang out with Jay more. I don't understand how he does that. I'm not going to go hang out with him and be like, so break it down for me. How are you? No. Just I want part of me to be more like him. Hmm. So I'm going to go hang out with him more. I'm going to buy a plane ticket and go to Santa Monica and spend 2 days and fly back to New York. It's a shit flight.
How is that not transactional?
Great question. Because he wants to hang out with me too. Hmm. It's we had the conversation of we both jived. Hmm. And he said, you should come out to Santa Monica, man. Now I'm making the decision in my head, do I want a relationship with Jay? And this all happens quickly, right? But do I want a relationship with Jay? Yes. No. Yes. Okay. Why? Because I think he's awesome. Mm. I think there's a lot I could learn from him. And I want to know that I have a Jay Ferrugia watching me somehow. Where like if I step out of line, if I talk shit about somebody and Jay hears about it, it's going to disappoint Jay. I can't do that. Mm. I don't want to disappoint Jay. I want him to respect me and be my friend. I just became a better person. He wants to hang out with me. It's not transactional for me to go. Mm-hmm. It's a give. You know, this happened with Gabrielle a couple of weeks ago. It was really interesting, actually. I made a post about a person, and she has a relationship with this person. I tried to be respectful in the post and talk about why I wouldn't follow this person's instruction. And she was like, I think you shouldn't have done that. I'm like, that's really interesting. And then somebody else I respect sent me a post saying, you were too kind to that person. I don't know how you do that. So I found myself riding this fence of like these two people I really respect and I'm friends with telling me the opposite thing about what I just did. And they're also friends with each other. And I'm not going to tell one, the other one said this. I'm just fascinated by that sociology and being able to ask them both, like, why? What do you think I did poorly? How could I do it better? That's, if you have friends who are reaching out to you about a post that you made and telling you that you could be a better person by doing this a different way, whew, you're onto something. Mm-hmm. Especially if those two friends are telling you a different way to do it. Mm.
What were, to circle back to the event.
Oh, sorry, one more thing. And especially if those friends stay your friends.
After the fact.
Yes.
Yeah. Because to your point, some people might comment and then have an expectation mm-hmm. that you're going to do something. You're going to take it down. You're yep. going to make a rebuttal.
Yep.
You're going to go against what you believe to be true and accurate, mm-hmm. right? Your own, it could be your own authenticity. And if you don't, they're like, fuck Sean.
Right. Right. But they weren't sharing that information with me for their benefit.
Right.
They weren't like, if you want to hang out with me, you can't do that. Mm. It was just, hey man, I think that I know what you're trying to accomplish. And I think you'd be better off doing it a different way. Mm. Take it for what it is.
I like that.
And I was like, that's awesome. And now next time I go to make a post in this similar fashion, you know they're going to be in my head. Mm-hmm. And you know if I have any thoughts about it, I'm going to ask them, what do you think of this? Mm-hmm. And they're going to want to answer that. That's cool.
Everybody wants to, and I imagine you would do the same thing for them.
I would love to.
Everyone wants to. That's the interesting thing about that, the circle analogy that we're building here is everyone in that group, they want to see each other thrive, improve, get mm-hmm. better. That's an important piece about having a circle that inspires you. And it's not necessarily, like you said, it's not about where you fall in the amount of income that you have. And it's not about your perceived status. It's a genuine desire to elevate everyone else in the circle. Mm-hmm. That's a critical piece of it.
Yes.
And it's the, if you don't have people who are willing to do that for you, you don't have friends, you have anchors.
Yes.
And that's where the people who get stuck in their hometowns with the same five friends that they've had from high school that all hate their lives and they bitch about their wives and they hate their jobs, that is uninspiring.
Yes. And that happens even after people level up, by the way.
Yeah.
Because what happens is people will level up and then they find themselves surrounded by this different group that's leveled up from where they were before. And there's this false belief of having leveled up and being done. Mm-hmm. We talked about this with the 10 identities that we can cover on another podcast. But the idea of like, I don't hang out with my high school friends anymore. They've gone a different way. That's fine. I go this way. Now I have these friends. And for me, for a long time, that was like my CrossFit friends. Mm-hmm. I was so fit. All I cared about was being able to clean and jerk 235 pounds. Can I deadlift 3X my body weight? Can I back squat 2X my body weight? Can I run a mile in under 5:30 after I deadlift 2X my body weight? Right? Like that's the kind of stuff that I cared about. And that was the social currency of my relationships. Mm. It was like we're all inspiring each other to keep getting fitter. Mm-hmm. I don't care about that anymore.
Yeah, well, I think that runs out for most people at some point in time.
But it doesn't run out for everybody.
And right.
There are people who are still chasing those things. And that's where I'm like, oh.
There hasn't been an evolution.
I can't stay here.
I like the idea like of the climbing. I saw this visual and I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was you're climbing a mountain, right? But it's not a linear. It's like every step, there's a slider that goes up and down. And this is the difficulty. It's for every level, there's a new devil, mm-hmm. right? And I love the idea of there's at some point in time when you're at this version of yourself. Where you achieve and you accomplish the things that you wanted to in that version of yourself. You make the conscious decision to, we keep going back to this, I keep going back to this, tear down and start over, mm-hmm. right? Decide, okay, this was great. And I felt good having one successful CrossFit affiliate. Mm-hmm. Let's do two.
Right.
And I felt good having two. And then I'm like, I'm no longer inspired to be this. You know what? I actually don't want to coach people anymore. I want to coach coaches. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, all right, I don't want to coach coaches. I want to lead gym owners. Mm-hmm. And I think that goal of expansion and elevation and ambition for me personally, I can't speak for everybody, is one of the drivers. And those are the type of people that I find the most fascinating, inspiring is the ones who like, they're not complacent mm-hmm. and they don't find complacency.
Correct.
That's poison.
One of my favorite questions somebody asked me for my keynote at the Real Coaches Summit was, you shared all of these struggles and failures. Do you regret them? Mm. And my answer to her was, I regret the way I behaved in the moments of the failures.
Interesting.
I'm not who I am today without the failures. Mm. That the only way I believe we can truly become great mentors to other people is to have experienced significant painful loss of some sort, to have recovered from it so that it's no longer a wound, it's a scar, and then to have strong purpose around helping other people. Because if we have strong purpose and we have wounds that we've recovered from as scars, we can show people that there's a way out from where they are because we've walked it. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have the scars, if we still have the wounds, we're not a believable guide. Because we're not sure if we're going to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have strong purpose, we're never going to stay in it. So I'm glad those things happened for me. And they sucked. And I'm not proud of how I showed up in all of them. And that's what I shared with her as an answer. And that speaks to what I think you're describing is like the tear down, build up. Mm-hmm. The one thing I think is important when people tear things down and build them back up that they need to be careful of is you don't rip out the foundation.
Yeah.
We're not rebuilding the whole thing. We're saying, oh.
Not necessarily.
Right. Maybe this part of the foundation has to come out. But you're not throwing out everything about who you were. our identity is built on our experiences. So they're always there. The mistake would be to pretend as if they never happened.
Yeah. Well, it's the go back to the be, do, have exercise, right? Part of the benefits of the new way of being is I get to keep the five positives from the old.
Sure.
It's a part of your foundation. Mm-hmm. And to your point, the education, the experience, all of the trials and tribulations that we've been, like, you don't get to become the phoenix without burning to ash.
Right.
In the beginning.
Speaking of the be, do, have, I think we should do another podcast on that.
Okay. Certainly can.
One of the guys at the event came over to me. He's like, I had soldier.
Mm.
And then in my new self, I had leader. He's like, dude, totally different people.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different people.
That's cool.
Yes. Anything else for today?
Was there any other key takeaways for you from the summit that would make sense to encapsulate in this conversation?
There were key takeaways, but not that make sense to encapsulate in this conversation. Right.
Then I am complete.
Term pro. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Active Live Podcast. Please remember, give us a hand, rate it, review it wherever you listen to shows. We are on a mission to humanize the healthcare industry by professionalizing the fitness industry to empower the individual to live a life unlimited by the way that their body looks, feels, or performs. If you are inspired by that mission and want to jump on the wagon, find us anywhere. Active Life Professional on Instagram, Active Life RX on Instagram. Come to me personally at Dr. Sean Pestuch. We want to welcome you onto the train. We want you to be a part of the mission. We want to offer you the opportunity to pursue this right alongside us. We're inspired by your effort, and we hope to help you in your journey. Turn back.